neighborhood I lived in was like Soul City, you know, USA, you know, south side of Chicago.
The soulful Lou Rawls.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm going to Chicago, and I'm sorry, but I can't take you. No, I can't. I said that I'm going to Chicago, and I'm sorry, but I can't take you. Woman like you can do for me, my baby.
A fleet of Mississippi riverboats shuttled the first black New Orleans musicians to the big, bustling frontier city of Chicago when the century was only a few years old. By 1918, the occasional movement northwards had become a flood. By 1925, at the height of the jazz age, the Windy City was something like the musical capital of America. And by 1950, well then, the place was still jumping.
Some of the hippest blues clubs in the world, man. And, you know, I mean, like, if the things that they were doing then could have been recorded, man, and played now, man, it would have been fantastic, you know, because I used to stand outside and listen because I couldn't go. I wasn't big enough to go inside. Mm-hmm. We could stand out there in the alley, you know, under the window, you know, and hear the music coming out, man. Cats like B.B. King, man, who was one of the greatest. Muddy Waters, John Lee Hooker, man. All these cats was playing in these places that I'm talking about, man.
Like many of those who grew up in the neighborhood of 43rd and South Park, young Lou Rawls had gotten much of his early education, musical and otherwise, from the street.
Naturally, kids running around the street, you know, and they didn't have nothing to do but run up and down the alleys and the streets and things, you know, and play. And we hear this music, man, and we would naturally, we'd stand out there, you know, and listen to me grooving on this music. We didn't know what was happening, you know, we'd hear the people in there having fun, laughing and talking. So it was just a groove, man, to stand there and listen to the music, man. And it would be, oh, listen, talking about funky. Listen, if that wind would have been a little lower, we couldn't have stood there.
They have a lot of rhythm on the South Side. They don't have much else, but they've got rhythm.
I was born and brought up in a kitchenette apartment, so naturally I can talk about that, like Dead End Street. I can talk about that. That's truth. That ain't no fiction. That's all facts, man. I'm not protesting.
Right.
You dig it?
Uh-huh,
sure. I'm not protesting against it. I always make the statement, I'm so glad that I was there. I can say glad because I'm not there anymore. Mm-hmm. You dig it?
They say this is a big, rich town, but I live in the poorest part. I know I'm on a dead end street in a city without a heart. I learned to fight before I was six, the only way I could get along. When you're raised on a dead end street, you gotta be tough. Strong. Now all the guys are no getting in trouble, that's how it's always been. When the odds are all against you, how can you win? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm gonna push my way out of here, even though I can't say when. But I'm gonna get off of this dead end street, and I ain't never gonna come back again. Never. No, no, no. I'm gonna push my way out of here, even though I can't. Well, I'm gonna get off of this dead end street. to this dead end street no more. No, 'cause I'm gonna get me a job. I'm gonna save my dough. Get away from here. I ain't gonna come back no more. I'm tired of a dead end street. I wanna get out in the world and learn something. Gotta break it my back.
You don't live in Chicago if you don't know how to take care of yourself. You know, if you don't know, the kids there'll teach you. You know, they'll teach you right quick.
Around the South Side, Ellis McDaniel was known as a pretty fair amateur boxer. He had compiled an impressive record as a teenager, 27 wins against only 3 losses. But there were some who thought he showed even greater promise with a guitar than with gloves. He had faced his first audience in a street corner when he was 12, leading a musical group comprised of 2 guitars and a washboard.
Then we called ourselves the Langley Avenue Jive Cats. We played all the little clubs around. We won all the little amateur shows, and we won so much that we couldn't even get on any. Anytime we showed up, they wouldn't let us on, you know, because nobody else had a chance.
Back in the boxing days, the kids around the neighborhood had given Ellis a nickname. They called him Bo Diddley, and it stuck.
My mother once told me that there was a fellow that used to run around in Macomb, Mississippi, where I was born, that they used to call Bo Diddley. Now, I had never heard the name until the kids started calling me this, and I thought they were being funny. I thought it was something nasty, you know? And I still don't know, because the name is not in the dictionary. It was a long time before I figured out how to get the correct spelling for it. So we all, Leonard Chess and Phil Chess, we all got together and we figured out how to spell it. So this is the way we copyrighted it for me.
Now when I was a little boy, at the age of 5, I had something in my pocket, keep a lot of folks alive. Now I'm a man, May 21. You know, baby, we can have a lot of fun. I'm a man, I spell M-A-N, man.
The immigrant brothers Chess, Leonard and Phil, ran a small but profitable recording company called Chess Checker, headquartered on Chicago's East 49th. There, during the 50s, they were turning out some of the earthiest and most authentic blues sounds in all of R&B. Talented artists like Chuck Berry, Willie Maybon, and Sonny Boy Williamson literally wandered into the studios unannounced, brandishing their demonstration tapes or records and asking for an audition.
I was looking for a job, you know, and they had that recording studio about a block and a half from me for maybe 4 or 5 years, and I didn't even know it. So then somebody, a fellow that I knew that had been putting nickels and dimes in the hat when we passed the hat on the street corners, he called Phil Chess and told him he wanted him to hear. So we jumped in there and we played Bo Diddley, and here I am.
With his very first hit record, the song that bore his name, Bo Diddley created a guitar riff that was to have a resounding impact on American rock and roll in the 50s and British rock in the 60s. But the melody itself was frankly derivative.
Well, there was a song called Hambone, done with the leg bit, you know, on the leg like that. But I says, anybody can do anything with their hands like this. I am going to create something else. I'm going to put it in strings. And I kept fooling around with this thing until I got it right. When I stumbled onto it, this one particular thing, I left it like that. I just turn off like turning off knobs. That's the end of the rope. You know, you can't go no further.
So this is my baby diamond ring. If that diamond ring don't shine, he gonna take it to a private eye. If that private eye can't see, he better not take the ring from me. Thank you.
dirty corner, Nanny go. To make it pretty, baby, a Sunday coat. Oh, dirty corner, Bellcat. To make it pretty, baby, a Sunday hat.
I'd rather say Bo Diddley is going to be your man. You know what I'm saying? See, because when I say I, another guy can get the record and play it for a girl. And it means him. But when I say me and he get it and play it for her, his name ain't Bo Diddley.
Mo, would you come to my house and grab that phone? Take my baby away from home. Mother, that photo, where's he been? Up to your house and gone again. Bo diddly, have you heard? My pretty baby said she wasn't worth.
In a moment, a preview of the next chapter in John Gilliland's The Pop Chronicles.